I've said this before real quick, but like, I think the average American, like you could threaten them with their life or something. And they could not tell you how an internal combustion engine works besides like, I put gas in it sometimes and I get oil changes, I guess.
Yeah.
So, and now the auto industry is expecting people to learn about charging curves and kilowatt hours.
Right.
And so.
Right. We haven't sold the public on the word horsepower yet. Most people don't really like that. It's 400 a lot. So kilowatts going to be 10 years before we're there.
Hello, and welcome to the Plugged In Podcast, a weekly news show from Inside EVs about the future of transportation. I'm Patrick George, editor-in-chief of Inside EVs.
And I'm Tim Levin, senior reporter at Inside EVs. This week, we're talking about Lucid Motors' make-or-break moment with the launch of the Lucid Gravity. And we're talking about a potential mystery new model from Tesla. But first, how's it going, Patrick?
I'm good, man. I'm good. We're going to be joined by some very special guests today for a very, very special episode of the Plugged In Podcast. That's right. We're going already to special episodes on our second outing because we're going to be talking about the 2024 Inside EVs Breakthrough Awards, which is our end of year best car awards, and how we're going to recognize the people and technologies that are really transforming the electric car race right now. I'm really excited to dig into that, and that's going to take up a lot of our time on this episode because it's really, really interesting and cool and very exciting, I promise. But first, we should dive into the news a little bit, and there's been a weird amount of news since like the last time we did this. I'll start with you, Tim. Like you were just driving the Lucid Gravity, which is like a go right now, right? So what's give me the download on the Gravity, man?
Yeah. So Lucid just started making its second model ever last week, basically. It started with the Air sedan in 2021, which was highly acclaimed, but never really sold that many. You know, it was never really that kind of Model 3 moment that Tesla had, and that's kind of what Lucid is working to with the Gravity. Mm. So the Gravity is a big 7-seat SUV that's in production now and coming to consumers sometime soon. And it should basically open up a whole new, you know, customer base to this kind of fledgling, but well-funded startup. Yeah.
Yeah, because nobody's buying sedans anymore, unfortunately. Like, if they were like the Hyundai Ioniq 6 would be like the best-selling car in America. And yet here we are. So it's they kind of needed to do something that could move a little more people around, right?
Yeah. I mean, and you've said that the Lucid Air Pure is probably like the best EV that anybody can buy, or your favorite EV at least, right?
Yeah, if I had 75 grand to drop on a new car right now, which is a problem I do not currently have, it'd probably be that, man. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more on this too, because it was a contender for the Breakthrough Awards. But the Gravity's a big deal for them. I mean, the idea is this will sell enough of these and profitably that they can get to the point where they can launch their midsize car one day, which is going to be like sort of like the Lucid Tesla Model Y, I think. So they got high hopes for this thing. I mean, do you think you drove it? Do you think people are going to buy it?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. It's really cool. Like, you know, the Air's problem was never that it like wasn't an awesome EV. It was more that like they couldn't really sell that many of them. They couldn't find enough buyers for them. The Gravity kind of takes all the really cool stuff about the Air, like the design and the interior and the great like driving dynamics, and puts it in a much bigger SUV, and it's like super spacious. They probably wouldn't love me saying this, but other people have said it too, like it kind of has more of a minivan-ish sort of vibe to it than like
ask you if you thought it looked like a minivan.
I think
it does too. Like I never wanted to say that because that's such a like verboten term when you bring up minivans, but it kind of does.
But minivans are practical. Yeah, no, it's like, it's like got, you know, really short, stubby hood, tons of space in the interior. Like I fit in the third row perfectly fine, like with good knee room and, you know, good headroom. It has a giant frunk and a giant, you know, subfloor area in the trunk. Like Lucid kind of, I think, does the best at packaging EVs, you know? Like,
They make
their motors super tiny. They reduce battery size by having cars that are super efficient and like they get a lot of room to play around with. So in the Gravity, you know, it's like a smaller footprint than something like a escalator or whatever, but yeah, it's super spacious on the inside. Yeah. So this is going to be like good for them.
Yeah. This is going to be like the road trip car of 2025 to test out. If you're still driving your own car, if you're still using a steering wheel and pedals, which, you know, to pivot quickly, that's something that Tesla says it was done with. But wait, there's more, because now, as of like Monday, more affordable Tesla models might be coming out. After all, you know, Tesla's flirted with this idea of like making $30,000 or $25,000 EV. Most recently, Elon Musk is like, there's no point to that because we're going all in on robo-taxis. But now it has some signs of life, too. You want to elaborate there, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much, like, I'm frankly quite confused by this news, as I think you probably are, too. Like, we
all
didn't
the time.
Think that it, yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. Tesla's a really hard company to cover because they don't just, like, put out a press release and say, like, you know, these are our plans, like every other car company does. They're impossible to reach. And so everything that we know is based on,
they never
on,
pick
like,
up the phone,
rumors.
Which is yeah. hurtful, you know? That yeah. hurts my feelings. Yeah.
yeah. And so, like, yeah, we thought that there was going to be no, you know, cheaper Tesla that wasn't this robo-taxi without a steering wheel. Now, apparently, there is one. It's according to this. So Deutsche Bank analysts met with Tesla's head of investor relations, and they learned this. They made up this name, Model Q, for it. That's just like
Model Q. You know,
yeah, that's just that's. But to be clear, that's just the bank like making up a nickname. Everybody. Yeah. Historically has always said that like the cheaper, smaller Tesla would be called the Model 2. That was like, you know, generally the kind of accepted like nickname for it. But these analysts were told that this cheaper model will cost under $30,000 if you include the federal EV tax credit, which right. we don't know yet whether you can really include that or not next year, but that it'll be around that yeah. price. So indicating
yeah, cause,
like,
because Trump may be getting rid of it is the thing. And so it's like, yeah. is this, if the Model Q, that name is so silly. If the Model Q is like a $37,000, I know where they got. I hand it to Deutsche Bank for throwing chaos into this naming thing. Cause yeah. I've heard Model 2, I've heard Model Z. Yeah. Now it's Q. It's like I'm reading a social security number or something. Social security numbers have letters in them, right?
No? Yeah. Yeah.
I think so.
No,
but anyway,
no,
yeah,
no. Why don't you read yours aloud and then we'll know.
I was going to ask you to do that too. You beat me my own game. But no, like it's if this thing comes out and it's like $37,500, like that's okay, but it's not some groundbreaking thing. But if it's like legit $30,000 to get a Tesla electric car, and this isn't just some like comically decontented Model 3 that doesn't have seatbelts or airbags or something, then like this yeah. could be a game changer, you know? And it's quite the reversal. I'd say that, you know, we deal with a lot of really questionable Tesla rumors all the time, but like, this is like an official report from Deutsche Bank. I mean, this is, yeah. that's as solid as I have seen. So, maybe they got rolled here too by some of Elon's promises, you know, just, the day after this, the Deutsche Bank report came out, the Washington Post had a big story about how Elon has kind of personally walked away from a lot of Tesla's climate change goals, and you know the people he kind of interfaces with politically, they're not super into the climate thing. So he's more about, you know, robotaxis and autonomy and getting more EVs on the road. So mm-hmm. I don't know. You never know with these people, really.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, but like I'm still confused. Like, I still wonder whether like that Model Q, quote unquote, was actually just referring to like the robo-taxi that we do know is coming. I don't really know, but the important background here is that like Tesla for years now has relied extremely heavily on two models, the Model 3 and the Model Y, and that makes up like the overwhelming bulk of their sales.
Yeah, like 80-90%, something like that. The rest
yeah,
is just
yeah, like
dressing.
The Model S and X are these like higher end, you know, bigger vehicles that like pretty much are on the outs. And so it's been pretty well understood that Tesla needs something else. They need something that's not the Model 3 or the Model Y. They need like another, probably, hopefully, a more affordable vehicle that will like, you know, allow them to grow their sales. Because, you know, despite all the talk about robo-taxis or self-driving or like the Optimus robot, they make all their money pretty much selling electric cars, and like it seems like demand for the Model 3 and Model Y is kind of capping out, and that's why you've seen this year Tesla sales slowing down, you know. So they need this, and if they can deliver it, like, that would be great. That would be another affordable EV option, but we don't really know what to expect.
And that's where the market's going, the more affordable side of things. But that's also one of the biggest things we looked at this year on the Breakthrough Awards. And now that we've had as much news as we can, I'd like to talk about our efforts there to look at what matters most in the electric vehicle market right now. And to do so, we have two special guests. I am joined by Inside EV's deputy editor and my work husband, Mac Hogan, as well as contributing editor and longtime automotive journalist with bylines just about everywhere, Abigail Bassett. Abby and Mac, welcome, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us. We're excited.
Mac, I want to start with you because, like, you and I put our heads together at the beginning of this year. We're like, we should do, like, an end-of-year car awards thing or you know, like, best of at Inside EVs. And, you know, you had done extensive amount of awards testing as an editor at Road and Track. And you really had some strong thoughts about, like, what we should be doing and, like what matters here as a best car test. Like, what were your thoughts going into this?
Yeah, I think, you know, something that I got tired of in the enthusiast car world was this focus on these hyper expensive, hyper sophisticated flagship products that we all love. It's very cool to be able to show off to your neighbor by having the latest, greatest Porsche around. But that isn't really what's going to move the needle, right? And we've had the Model S since like 2013. Rich people who want a cool thing to show off, that niche has been totally well served. The history of the electric vehicle, you know, as it's been written since 2013. And what I really wanted to focus on was this feeling of like, why can't other people access this really good thing that we all like? Like, we all like driving these high performance, fun EVs. What is standing in the way? And, you know, me and you, Patrick, had these conversations of these big, big structural barriers, right? Like, the charging infrastructure just isn't really there yet if you're not in a Tesla. And, you know, once you tell a normal American consumer, like, okay, so the first thing you do is you download the Better Route Planner app, then you get six individual apps for each of the individual possible chargers you do. Their eyes just glaze over. They go, I'm going to go to the gas station maybe get a hybrid if we're lucky.
I've said this before real quick, but like, I think the average American, like, you could threaten them with their life or something, and they could not tell you how an internal combustion engine works besides, like, I put gas in it sometimes and I get oil changes, I guess.
Yeah.
And now the auto industry is expecting people to learn about charging curves and kilowatt hours.
Right.
And so,
right. We haven't sold the public on the word horsepower yet. Most people don't. They're like, it's 400 a lot. So kilowatts going to be 10 years before we're there. And in the same way, right? Like, that's not the only barrier. So we looked at a lot of these things like affordability. That's the one that comes up the most. You know, EVs are rising at an interesting time where EVs are adding to the cost of a normal car, right? EVs are more expensive to produce until you've fully scaled them. And even to that extent, like, a Tesla is the only company that's profitably selling them at reasonable prices. And they've had to decontent a lot, right? Remove a lot of the cost of producing the car. So that was a big thing for me specifically to focus on, because every car is getting more expensive. The average transaction price of all cars in the US right now, as of October, per Kelley Blue Book, was like 48 grand, which is about what the average working adult between 35 and 45 makes. And then if you want an EV, it's 56 grand. So that's, you're now paying over 100% of your salary to get one of these cars. And, you know, that's just, something's got to give. We need cars and people and technologies that are going to break down these barriers. We need trucks that are more capable than the current group of EV trucks. We need things that can deliver longer range. We need things that are more efficient. We need to be pushing these barriers in every direction. So that's what I really thought was the motivation for this award setup, is rather than look at the cars that, like, we as a bunch of people who get to drive all the fun stuff are excited about, I wanted to look at, like, if you were going into the EV market in December 2023 and then you walked away, and then you came back in December 2024, what are the things that are actually have reshaped them, right? Like, what is an actual difference maker? ultimately, yeah, that faster version of the Porsche Taycan that we all love hasn't changed anything. We need something that's actually going to, you know, reach most normal consumers. And I'm pretty excited about where we ended up there.
Yeah. And not just to sum it up in like a couple words, right? Like, not just the best EV you can buy or like the best new EVs you can buy, but which are the models and also the technologies that are pushing the ball forward the most and like represent the biggest advancement to the EV market, yeah, right?
One real important thing there too is that this is an award that's going to happen every year. And one thing we saw at Road and Track is it's really hard to do an award of like best car this year because only a certain number of cars are new. And that's, yeah, what we're going to focus on for this. And so to say like, what's the best EV on sale? It's probably still the Model 3 for most people. And that, yeah, car came out in 2017. But is the new Model 3, the Highland, like a huge breakthrough? No. In the same way, like when I set up performance EV of the year at Road and Track, you know, the over $100,000 category last year went to a Porsche Taycan, and this year went to a Porsche Taycan because that's what exists in that market. So
it's good to be rich, it turns out.
Yeah, who would have known? The average salary of a Taycan owner is, or the median salary is $750,000, something like that. So. Yeah.
Is that for real?
Just not a car that's super relevant to most people.
Abby, I wanted to ask you, you know, you've been covering cars for a long time for a lot of outlets, you know, the start to finish in the modern EV race too. Like, what did you think of the electric market in America in 2024? Like, what was your thoughts about the segment as a whole right now?
Yeah, I think it's been a really interesting sort of year, right? We're in this transition phase where we've seen a lot of investment in things like infrastructure, in things like, you know, making sort of this idea of charging your car much more like filling your car at the gas station, both because of government incentives, because of a lot of the infrastructure build out that's happened. But then also we're finally seeing a lot of investments from OEMs, you know, automakers that have finally brought these cars that we've seen at auto shows for years and years to market, to actual consumers. Mm-hmm. And I think it's been really interesting in a lot of ways to see how the consumer market has sort of responded to that in terms of like, you know, the beginning of the year, the story was, oh, EV sales are way down. Oh, gosh, there's this crisis. Woe is me. But in reality, the truth of it is that actually, you know, consumers are still really interested in EVs. But to Mac's point, they're not interested in, you know, $100,000 Porsche Taycan. They're interested in something that they can actually afford. Yeah. And that's been the big sort of game changer, I think, this year, is that we've seen a lot more affordable EVs on the market that actually meet people's needs. So a lot of the contenders that we looked at in the segment really met a lot of people's needs in a lot of different ways, right? We looked at sedans. We looked at SUVs. We looked at some of the crossovers. We looked at, you know, a variety of things. And I think that in a lot of ways, that just makes, you know, it's that incremental move towards like more mainstream, right? We saw you guys recently ran a story about like the Honda Prologue being sort of the unsung hero, you know, doing really well in sales, even though, you know, it wasn't the most to enthusiasts exciting vehicle on the market, right? It was a joint project between GM and Honda. You know, there were some things that sort of fell apart in that deal and that are still sort of being sorted out. But I think that the fact that Honda has an electric vehicle that people can go and drive and try and experience and even buy is really, really significant, especially as we sort of look ahead into what, you know, 2025 and ahead brings, especially in the context of sort of the greater political shifts that we're seeing, some of the threats of tariffs and the threats of rolling back a lot of these EV incentives, which will certainly have a large impact on EVs and sort of that market. But I think we're really it's an interesting time where if you were like to graph it out, I would say, you know, we're seeing like the upswing of like more mass adoption of EVs, even though they remain expensive, right? Even though the average transaction price, to Mac's point, remains really high, there is this kind of consistent move upward. There's also an interesting thing happening too, given the political environment, obviously, in that there is this sort of rebellion in a way against Tesla and Elon Musk because of his politics, right? They were the dominating, and they continue to be the dominating EV player on the market. But what, you know, a lot of the reporting that we've done and that we've seen is that people are looking at their Teslas and going, you know what, this thing is a liability. Like, I don't want to be associated with this brand. I don't want to be associated with this kind of political, you know, craziness, whatever is happening here. So I want to get out of this vehicle. What are my options, right? And to see more EV manufacturers, more automakers out there offering more options that are maybe, you know, still a bit expensive, but a little bit more affordable, but that also meet consumers' needs in a new way. Plus the uptick in infrastructure has really sort of made this, like, we're on this steady sort of rise in the EV market, I think.
If this is what progress looks like, we had a really remarkable group of contenders this year that I'll run through right now. So the cars in contention for our inaugural Breakthrough Awards, the Lucid Air, specifically the Lucid Air Pure, which is the most affordable one in that family. Affordable is a relative term, as we'll get to in a minute. The 2025 Rivian R1S, which got heavily updated for this year. The Hyundai Ioniq 5N, the electric crossover that will kick your ass if you're driving a Lamborghini and send you home crying to your mommy. Kia EV9, which is the first and probably best real three-row electric SUV on the market. The Tesla Cybertruck, speaking of polarizing, and the Chevy Equinox EV. So we had a really, really interesting group of six cars. You're talking to four of the six judges we had for this. So, and we also, which we might touch on later, we named the Person of the Year and Technology of the Year. But like considerable amounts of debate went into what to include, what not to include in the test. And I want to talk about that real quick, but I'll just say that like some of the ground rules we had is like it had to be on sale right now, this year in America. You know, around fall when we started testing. So that excluded like the Volvo EX30 because like Joe Biden nuked that into orbit with his tariffs.
Well, and there are a lot. You've also seen many situations where car or other car outlets now award a car that is supposed to come out in a month and a half, and then there's a delay, or you know, nowadays we just can't take any car company's word for when it's going to come out. So if it's
all I'll say is I have some very nice friends who work at a certain magazine that gave the Chevy Blazer SS the award last year, and that car is still not on sale. And I was like, damn sure that wasn't going to happen in my publication. So like, we played it safe here. But that's how it goes sometimes. But what else was in contention that you guys remember that we talked about, argued about, and decided not to put in the running ultimately?
Well, just to start at a high level, I would say that, you know, there's an inherent question when you are talking about judging stuff for awards of like, how much do we want to invite things that we know are going to lose? Because there's a, you know, that was something we ran into at Road and Track at Performance Car of the Year. We would invite a lot of cars, even knowing that they didn't really have much of a chance, but you never know what's going to surprise you and all that. But in this situation, I wanted to invite only cars that I think we could make a real compelling argument for. Because I wanted nomination to feel like I didn't want to do six levels of runner up. I wanted to say, if you're here, it's an award in some, you know, like these cars are all pushing the boundaries, some more than others. And definitely, you know, they're not all equally our favorites. But I wanted it to feel like, yeah, every car here is something of an editor's choice. And there are maybe one or two cars that were not as sold out. Like, I don't know that I would totally endorse the Cybertruck, but I do think it's an innovative product and I think it's interesting and I like driving it. Abby, I don't know if you have any other input on what we're going back and forth on.
I mean, one of the things that sort of stood out to me was sort of the question at the heart of this awards, right? Was, okay, what constitutes a breakthrough, right? Is it something that is, you know, under the skin that consumers can't necessarily see, like we saw with the Rivian R1S and their entire, you know, deletion of 1.6 miles of wiring and reduction of ECUs and all these things, like that's cool and all. And that's tremendous, marks tremendous technology advancement for that company. But actually, Mac, I think it was you that said, you know, really the goal of that was to boost, you know, profit, was to boost stock price for Rivian. You know, it wasn't necessarily that we saw consumers were going to be like, oh, wow, this is remarkably different for $80,000, right? Yeah. And I think a lot of it came down to the conversation about like, what is the consumer today really want? You know, I was a huge fan of the Ioniq 5, mostly because, you know, I'm an enthusiast at heart. So the 5N is super fun. It is loud. It is raucous. You can be like a teenager in it. And it just, literally brought a smile to my face every time I started that car.
Yeah.
But the truth of it was that when we sat down and talked about it and had a discussion about it, that wasn't like making, you know, to, you know, pull something from Tesla, but like making fart noises is not innovative, right?
Yeah.
Like making motor noises is not super innovative, even if it brings me immeasurable joy. So like, I think what was really interesting in particular about this group of contenders was that each one really had things that really made it stand out in the market and really made it made them unique in the market. And, you know, like Mac, I cannot recommend the Cybertruck, but you have to acknowledge that like there are certain things about each of these vehicles that raise the conversation and raise the awareness about these vehicles and about sort of the technological breakthroughs in the electrified space that each one of them bring to the table.
Yeah. And just to like, just for people who don't know, when we're talking about the, you know, I think we can go through some of these and talk about kind of what we thought the breakthrough was. And then, you know, ultimately like why it wasn't the breakthrough that we chose. But like, Abby, you're talking about the Ioniq 5N, like this is a super like souped up basically version of the Ioniq 5. And the kind of breakthrough feature in it is this simulated paddle shifting. Basically, you have these paddles on the steering wheel and it lets you, I mean, it mimics very convincingly, right, the shifting of a manual gas car. And it also has like all the auditory like signals of that. It's revving and you can choose different like noises for how you want it to sound. And so that was really
cool. You
could
hit the red line, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's literally a high performance gas car that does not use gasoline. And every other way it drives like one, which is like rad as hell. But like to Abby's point, it's like it's rad as hell to like a dozen people, half of whom work at InsideEVs.com.
Yeah, or in this room.
Or our friends. Yeah. It's not for normies, man. Like, you know.
No.
I was just gonna say, I think that highlights like how this award is also gonna change over the years of like what matters most right now. There will come a time where the trucks and the enthusiast cars are maybe the lagging indicators of the market, where all of your Equinoxes and EV9s have all been electrified, and now it's like, okay, we need big honking trucks and we need fast
big
cars.
Honking trucks.
Yeah. That get nerds excited like us. And that may be the year where whatever follows the Ioniq 5N wins. But this year it's like, read the room a little. Is this, you know, what we need? No, and I'm glad it exists. And I think it's an awesome car. I just was like, I cannot get more than one sentence into explaining it to a normal person.
No.
Before
they
just are like, absolutely not. Yeah.
It's not for them. I'll also add that we worked really hard not to include more than one car from each manufacturer. We counted Hyundai and Kia separate entities because technically they are. But this led to kind of an interesting discussion. Do we include the updated new Tesla Model 3 or the Tesla Cybertruck? And that was a lot of debate because like the Model 3 did get some significant updates. It still sells well. You say what you want about Tesla and Elon. I love the Model 3. It's one of my favorite cars, like full stop to drive. But in the end, we thought that when we're talking about breakthroughs and like what moves the ball forward, it was the Cybertruck. When you're talking about, you know, 48 volt electrical system and drive-by-wire steering and the crazy construction methods they put into it. And, it did do some novel things, but it did not win our contest for kind of a multitude of reasons. And I'll ask the crowd, like, what did you guys think of your Cybertruck when you had it?
I'll jump in first.
Well, first of all, does somebody want to...
Oh, sorry, Tim. Go ahead.
No, just like, I think, go ahead, Abby, but also tell the people what drive-by-wire, like, is, you know, and what you thought of it.
Oh, God. So I spent some time in the Cybertruck really early in the year. So, like, my most recent memory of it is pretty distant, right? It being December, I think I was in it in, like, February. And, you know, one of the things that stood out about it is, you know, obviously its exterior design and its striking appearance on the road. It felt huge to me, even with the drive-by-wire. Now, drive-by-wire essentially means that there's no mechanical linkage between the steering wheel and the wheels, and it's all done by electronics. Very basic, very basic explanation. We're not going to get into how that works. It's really complicated. There's lots of computers and chips and all these and wiring harnesses and all these things that handle all that stuff. So basic level, that's how it works. Even though the turning radius like is essentially like that of like an F-150, it felt so big to me.
Abby, I want to think like you're out in California. I drove that car in Texas and had a very different reaction to it than you did. Like, what did people, what was the vibe when you drove around in a Cybertruck?
So I spent some time in it in down in like Laguna Beach area, because that was where like the loaner was, because we had to get it off Turo and yeah. you can only drive it within so many miles. So that was like the closest location. There were a lot of tourists around, so where I was driving it down by the beach. And so like the number of people that would like take out their cameras and take pictures, it was almost like, so back when I lived in New York, I used to drive a bunch of cars in the city in Manhattan. And, you know, if you drove like a Bentley or like a Lamborghini through Manhattan, people like literally it was, you were not the danger. They were the danger on the road, because they're like driving with their camera phone, their phone out the window. Like, oh God, you're like, stay in your lane. Right. It was a similar experience with the Cybertruck at the time, because it was so early, right? Because it was so early in the release of it when people were finally getting, actually getting the vehicles. So people were really interested in it. They had a lot of opinions about it. I mean, that was where sort of the dumpster meme started to like evolve and come up. A lot of people were like, it looks like a rolling dumpster. Not sure about this. Like, is it real? Had lots of questions about that. But it was seen a lot in my area as sort of a novelty. Now, you know, 9 months later, whatever, I would say people see it as a mix, sort of a nuisance, but also like, they see these Cybertrucks coming and they're like, okay, we know where you stand. We're just going to move along.
I drove the one I had in Texas and I didn't get any middle fingers or nasty reactions, just because like everyone in Texas is really well armed and like road rage isn't really a thing where I come from. Like it's just, it keeps everybody honest. You know, like you don't like confront people on the road, but you had a different experience. Right. People really reacted viscerally to yours, didn't they, Mac?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I like Abby, I drove possibly the same one early in February and or mid-February. And when it was brand new and people were coming up all the time, you know, and there's a couple really interesting anecdotes about it. The first was when I first got on the highway, I'd already had people taking pictures of me, already like waving as I drove past. Get on the highway, and as I'm merging, I realize I'm going to end up right next to a Model 3. And I'm like, this guy, it's going to be the greatest day on earth for him. And I pull up and look over to see his reaction. He is fully looking down, eating a salad, no awareness of the outside world while on autopilot. So
see, that's a Tesla typical. Driver though. That is a yeah. Tesla driver. That is what it is.
Yeah. So that was the first experience.
Yeah. Oh no, sorry. You had two. I forgot. Go ahead.
Yeah. And then later I was driving along these cliffs near my house, just like, it's like an outdoor park and you know, it's right along the road. And within 30 seconds of each other, one guy went full body like Steve Austin, like, Devil Cybertruck, hell yeah, and like put his arms out like crazy. And then less than 30 seconds later, I drove past someone with my windows down. He turned around, saw the truck coming, and went dick right as I went by. So
yeah.
Later I got flicked off by a teenager. So it inspires some interesting reactions. Tim, sorry, but you were going to say?
No, same thing. Just like I had more people than ever like give me like mega thumbs up, and then also more people than ever in any other car like very much disapprove publicly. And
did you get flipped off?
I had like some nasty looks, more just like very, very nasty looks. It was also election day in the liberal stronghold of Berkeley, California. I think tensions were high.
That's not the car you want to be driving on that day.
people are not well armed here, so you know, it's all good.
True.
In the end, Cybertruck did not win. I think all of our judges noticed different quality issues, kind of balked at the price tag, the design of it. I think we found it hard to untether from the Elon Musk thing. It's frankly not that capable of pickup truck, honestly. Like Kevin Williams tried. He went to a junkyard and hauled an engine with it, of all things, and had kind of a horrible time doing that. So I thought there are some things that are very impressive about it, but it was not the winner in my mind.
What we need is a truck that convinces people that electric pickup trucks can be more than a rich plaything for coastal, you know, crypto guys. And this did not succeed. If anything, it lessened the adoption rate because it just looks like a toy.
Yeah, I mean, I would just like the breakout things about it are that steer by wire, which no other car has, and it gives it this really interesting steering feel. It has rear wheel steering too, so it's like quite nimble. That was like really cool, but ultimately not like breakthrough EV of the year territory, I think.
Another car we tested that had significant updates this year, we touched on this a little bit earlier, the 25 Rivian R1S. Basically visually indistinguishable from the so-called like first generation of Rivian R1S. Significantly improved under the skin. More range, more power, more options. Said almost 2 miles of wiring less here. The software is way better. Like they have, them and Tesla, probably the best software game in all of cars, like outside of China right now. I really love driving that thing, but like it just in my mind just didn't emerge as like the car, like the winner. It's still, Rivian's still got a lot of like startup-y headaches, like creaks and rattles and, you know, some glitches here and there. Like it still feels a bit underbaked in some ways. Even though I really like that company, I really hope that they succeed. Like what else did we think of the R1S when we were in that?
Yeah, I had some thoughts about the R1S. I love the R1S. I think it's great, but like to your point, it's still not completely fully baked.
For those listening, we had to hit pause just a bit because Tim's cat destroyed his set, but the cat has received a stern warning. It'll be put on a performance improvement plan for next year, and we're back in action talking about the Rivian R1S and just all of the many changes that happened this year to that car. But like all of our judges brought up a really good point that I didn't even think of when I was driving it, which is that like, who are those changes good for? Like, is it good for the consumer or for Rivian, which now has to spend way less money because it has 2 miles less of wiring in each car. Like, did those upgrades, these models, like, did that really translate into a better EV that people can experience every day? Like, what do we think?
I mean, marginally, I believe so. I mean, this was my point from the beginning of just like, I think it's very smart and clever that they were able to reduce costs while making a product that's better. But they didn't pass that cost savings onto the consumer. So, I mean, technically, you can say that some of the higher end versions are a little bit cheaper than the equivalent version, and the tri-motor is now as powerful as the old quad motor, blah, blah, blah. But again, you know, when we're talking about explaining things to the average American who's wondering whether they can go electric, like, I'll tell you, the convincing argument does not start or end with zonal architectures, and it never will. If they can get the cost down, that'd be great, but they're, you know, that's still a big fight for them, and I'm excited to see what they do with R2. And R3, but I just don't see enough for the average consumer. And while I'm happy that they're, you know, benefiting their shareholders, as all corporations, God bless them, are wont to do, you know, that we're not CNBC or the Motley Fool. We're not here to award shareholder value. We want to award customer-centric approaches, and that didn't do enough for me.
Yeah. And I think that one of the things about that, the innovations that they did do, is that it does set them up to sort of get through this EV valley of death where they're trying to make profit, and so that they can make vehicles that, you know, people can afford and actually want. So like the R2 and the R3, which I'll tell you, like they have been running that thing ragged all over at different events and everything. I mean, I saw it at Pebble Beach this year at the annual sort of car bacchanal and the richest place in the world, which is a whole other experience. But like, the amount of people, even at that event, that were really swarming around those vehicles there was really, really impressive and really surprising in a lot of ways. And so I think that, you know, while the innovation does not actually, like, you know, directly benefit the consumer just yet, it will eventually, and it will very soon.
One hopes. Yeah. I'd be stunned if the R2 and R3 R3X one day didn't win one of these awards from us. I bet that day will come. Tim, what were you going to say?
No, just that like the updates that they did here with the like computer architecture, the electrical architecture, like, is really significant and interesting. You know, they reduced the number of computers basically in the car from 17 to 7. And so you have like 7 really high powered computers that are connecting all the functions of the car. And, you know, Rivian says that should make it more easily updatable over time, I think. And so like consumers may end up seeing that, and they already get, you know, the benefits of having that kind of underlying system in Rivian's generally. So it does have some importance. And also, I think even more than that, like, it's this kind of innovation that got them this deal with Volkswagen. So
that's huge.
You know, that got them their $5 billion plus that's going to take them all the way to R2 and R3 production. They're kind of really riding this those improvements pretty well.
Just not the winner this year. Another startup that was really interesting. Britt mentioned this briefly earlier too, the Lucid Air Pure. I love this thing. It's quote unquote the cheap Lucid Air, which means it's like, you know, 70-75 grand. I think this is another one where it's like the technology at work in these cars is so crazy good but that's hard to translate in a way that like normal people coming from the gas car world can understand. And it's kind of a long-running criticism I have with Lucid, which has the industry-best motors and battery tech and aerodynamics and everything, but it has this kind of nerdy vibe where it's like some engineer's pushing up his glasses on his eyes, but it's the most efficient car around. It's like they need to find a way to like sell that to people in a way that matters. It's like it goes farther and longer than anything else and charges faster than anything else and in many cases faster than anything else. Like, boom, period, end of story.
Spike the football a little bit rather
spike
than
the football a bit. Yeah.
Write a dissertation.
They don't have that kind of almost like early Tesla, early Elon Musk swagger at that company. Not that that's what we're judging here, but I think that is an issue of theirs. But
one thing we're judging is like what's going to shake up the market, right? And like, number one, I think it was you, Patrick, that first pointed this out, is that there's like big expensive sedans aren't what moves the needle. And yep. If they are, they need to be something that gets people really excited. And I think I would struggle. I think the Lucid Air is something I would rather have over a Model S. I would struggle to tell a friend's rich dad that he should get a Lucid Air instead, because I would be like, well, it is better at road trips as long as you know how to plan for them in a way that Tesla just takes care of on the back end. I think that like sexiness problem that you pointed out is a real thing of just like, this is a really cool car. But it's hard, you know, it's not selling in serious numbers because, yeah, like the Sapphire is really cool, but that's 220 grand. And this one, the efficiency argument is hard to make. I mean, as, you know, Tim was explaining with the Gravity, if you are efficiency minded, your luxury SUV probably should just end up looking like a minivan. A minivan's the most efficient way to package that space. But I think that kind of shows, at least to me, where that efficiency argument breaks down a little, because like, I don't know, people who want big SUVs, sure, the R1S is a little bit less blocky or less efficient space-wise, but it also looks like a big, tough SUV, and that matters. So I think that's something Lucid, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out as they move on to these higher volume products, because I think the Gravity could be a huge hit as long as they can figure out how to sell it.
Well, and I think that's kind of the problem with it is like when I drove it around, you know, Los Angeles, I've been in and out of a lot of cars throughout my career. And there are certain ones that like people stop and like take, like you look out the window and somebody's taking a picture of. The Gravity, or I'm sorry, the Air was never that, right? Yeah. Like nobody ever was like, nobody ever stopped and took a picture of it because it was something innovative or unique or different looking, right? It was like, huh, what's that? Is that a Mercedes like S-Class? Because, you know, everybody thinks the jelly bean shape kind of stuff like is sort of throughout that sedan build. And I think that's one of the places that Lucid kind of struggles. Like the shape is that way because it is extremely slippery, extremely efficient. It gives you that range, but it's also not the most appealing, like visually.
Oh, I disagree completely.
I disagree completely.
I think it looks awesome. I think it looks like a spaceship, and I think I feel like Tony Stark every time I'm driving it. I'm like, this thing's really badass.
Wow. Yeah.
I think it looks really cool, especially the one with the two-tone, like the silver, the up and top, which I don't think you get on the Pure.
Yeah.
I think it looks really cool, but I'm a nerd.
I'm the same. It's like, it's really handsome, but like whenever I see one on the road, I'm just like, oh, that person's a weirdo like me. That you even know what that is. Let alone like you bought it. Like, it's like, you're, we should get a beer sometime because you seem to get it and you spend a lot of money on interesting choices, you know?
You, sir, seem to care about miles per kilowatt hour. Men like myself.
Yeah.
A fellow MPKWH. Just to go back off vibes for a second into a little bit of the nuts and bolts. I don't want people to think we're only evaluating all these on vibes. There's really, reasons for the Cybertruck not winning. And in the same way with the Lucid, I think we all had a little bit of mixed experience on the user experience. I find the software to be pretty non-intuitive. I don't know if it's something I could get used to. This is my first time. The volume knob thingy on the steering wheel was like really kind of felt broken, and it was laggy. And, you know, there's just little things like this where we're now in this weird era where just being the new EV startup, you don't get all the passes in the way that you're used to. And now it's like, well, you want me to spend $80,000 on a luxury sedan? You know, you're up against BMW and Mercedes and all these companies that have been doing it for a long time. And if you're not leading on software, which I would say they're not, then you have to lead on either materials or design. I think that design is there, but I don't feel like the materials and user experience is really fully baked yet.
It'll take them a minute to preach the gospel of efficiency, but like with technology that they have, like they are on the right track. Like they Definitely. Their thesis has been proven right on everything. I also want to switch gears real fast and now talk about the Kia EV9, which interestingly came, I think, very close to winning this. And, you know, based on just like what I've said so far, you probably guess who our winner is. Like, I think there was a lot of back and forth as to whether the Kia three-row electric SUV should win this, and like a strong case for that car could be made. I like that thing a lot. Three-row SUVs suck to drive. Like, they're garbage. Everyone loves them in America, and they are just like minivans in REI gear. Like, they look rugged and interesting, and they're slow and miserable. And like the EV9 rules. Like, it's quick.
Yep.
It looks really cool. It's very nice inside. Like, it's fast as all get out. That's if you have like multiple kids, like that's, and you can afford it, like that's the car you want, I think. Yeah. And you guys were also impressed by the EV9, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think this is, you know, this is one of those products that like the Model 3, like a couple other important, like the Rivian R1S, the best product in its class is an EV. The fact that it's an EV is a bonus, but that's not, you don't need it to be an EV to make an argument for this. You can say, oh, it drives better, it looks better, it's got better technology, it's more fun, it's offered in cool colors. It's got all of these advantages on top of the fact that it's also electric, which means your running costs are going to be low, your maintenance is going to be very low, all that stuff. I think it's an awesome product, and it's definitely the best three-row crossover I've ever driven. I think had we only been looking at the EV market, and bear with me for a second here, if this was a world where we were judging EVs in a vacuum and internal combustion cars didn't exist, I think the EV9 would have won. But what's hard about the EV9 is it is still significantly more expensive than any of the internal combustion products that are sold alongside it, including the Kia Telluride, which is excellent. Yeah. And that is, to me, what held it back a little bit. If we're still having an affordability issue, I would love for you to get this over a Toyota Highlander. I also understand you may not have like the 15 grand of difference that's going to be in the real world, and that's okay.
I was going to say the thing that I am continually, and I think most of us are continually impressed by, is the fact that, you know, this company can continue to pack so much value into this package, right?
Yeah.
The thing that stood out for me about the EV9 was the fact that like, Just from like a sheer experience perspective, like driving around on the streets of LA, if you know the streets of LA, if you know like the highways in particular, they have big concrete like sections, right? So you have these gaps where every gap you're like, da-dunk, 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 right? In the EV9, it drove like a luxury vehicle. It was quiet. Yeah. It was smooth. It was even. Like there wasn't this like constant like jittering into the cabin. And just the fact that they've been able to, you know, package this vehicle at the price, even though it is, you know, not super affordable, but at the price that they have, I think really made it a compelling argument for it being a breakthrough, right? Because, you know, with the range, with all the features that they offer, and then to add this sort of like level of like luxury feel to it was really something that stands out in a market that has largely been targeted at the luxury buyer since its beginning, essentially. So I really enjoyed the EV9 a lot, and was really just overall impressed, to Patrick's point, like he wrote crossovers suck to drive. This one did not suck to drive. It was great.
Yeah.
It's the only one I'd want. Good.
To underscore the breakthrough here, it's like a year ago or, you know, a little over a year ago, there were not very many EV3 row options available at all. Like the EV3 is the first, the EV9, the EV3 is coming someday. That might be a breakthrough award someday. The EV9 is the first three row electric SUV that's like truly mainstream, you know, from a brand, from a regular brand, right? There was the Rivian R1S, Tesla Model X, Mercedes, like EQS SUV had a third row. It's like kind of small. Tesla Model Y you can get as a three row, but it's also like totally not usable third row. So this is the first one that's like, you know, for people who had a Telluride, for people who had a Highlander, and like they just wanted something that was kind of regular like that, and it was electric. And that's what this provided. So it, in that way, like it is a kind of big deal.
Definitely.
It's just not
big
enough.
I think Kevin Williams, staff writer, also one of the judges, put it best where it's like, it's weird how all the electric three rows have just like a weird caveat. Like you would just, you could get an electric car, except like, well,
but
you can't really get a Model X because it's so weird and egg-shaped. And then, you know, I like that Tim's line about you can either get the egg-shaped Model X, the weird Rivian, or the weird and egg-shaped
EQS or something.
But yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The price held it back from the win, but it's the best vehicle in its class by far, until Hyundai's version of it shows up next year, and that's going to be an interesting showdown, which, by the way, leaves our winner by nearly unanimous decision, which was the Chevrolet Equinox EV. And I'll tell you, I thought it was kind of nice that this one went to a so-called traditional American car company that last year was having a lot of problems making EVs.
Yeah.
I mean, it seemed like they were in like full-blown disaster mode, and they've sorted it out. And this is an excellent, excellent car. And I just, for a lot of reasons, mostly like the price and value and features it offers, not so much the way it drives. But Class, what did we think of the Equinox and why it deserved to win?
Well, I'll say, I mean, if you had told me at this time last year that the winner of an Inside EVs award, I just signed on to work here, and that the winner next year would be the Chevy Equinox EV, and that I personally would own a Blazer EV, I would have been like, you're out of your mind. That's not happening. Because they were just in a rough spot last year. It didn't look like this was going to work out. And also, I mean, not to be too critical of GM, but I hear the word Equinox and I go to sleep. Like that's never been a product that has moved the needle. And you know, the company has sort of put in 10 years of half-assing it on the cheap stuff. So I was not expecting this to work out. But their thesis, like Lucid's, is being proven right, which is that people buy range, people buy software, and people buy on price. And if you can hit on all of those points, you really have found the exact secret sauce. And that's what they did with the Equinox, man. It's, you know, the $35,000 one, it's not a theoretical thing that might come next year. It's here. It exists. You can buy it. You know, it's not necessarily the one you want in the same way that you're not going to buy a RAV4 LE or whatever. But across the board, with the tax credit included, this thing is exactly price level with its internal combustion competitors. And for that, you get 319 miles of range, more power, faster acceleration than the internal combustion cars, better software, better design, same amount of cargo space. I mean, it's really hard to argue with. And this is the type of car that's just going to get people to convert because you're selling them something that's cheap and fulfills exactly what they want it to do.
Yeah. Add in the tax credits and you're looking at like mid 30K for this thing. And on the LT, which is a little bit rental car spec, it's pretty stripped down, but that's like 27 with tax credits. I mean, that's a hell of a lot of car for 27
rental car
or
spec
for mid
30s. These days means you still get Google Maps and Spotify streaming and it's
really nice.
I mean, it's not nothing. Yeah. Yeah, I was pretty happy with that.
I think that like one of the things that both Chevy and Kia with the EV9 did, to Patrick's point, was delivered a vehicle that people wanted and didn't have to compromise on, right? Because so much about electrification has been about compromise. It's been about, I have to deal with the public charging infrastructure, or I have to, install a charger at home, or I have to sacrifice, space, or like this is my only option for, a three row or whatever the case may be. This is one of the first, along with the EV9 vehicles, that feels like there's no compromise, right? Mm-hmm. On top of the fact that, Chevy is offering the NACS adapter, widely, and you can charge these things on Tesla superchargers. I think that's also a huge thing too. granted, you know, the other automakers are as well, but GM and Chevy were some of the first to actually get the adapters, given sort of the bottleneck that's happened because of the rollout of all of that stuff. So I was really impressed with the Equinox. I drove it from here to Palm Springs and back. I used Super Cruise the entire time because I had sort of the mid-spec thing. And I will say that Super Cruise, hands down, in my opinion, is one of the best hands-free technologies on the market right now.
Heck yeah.
So yeah.
And
if not the best.
It is. Yeah. And it makes things like that, you know, road trips like that, just that much easier, on top of the fact that I didn't have to stop and charge, right? It's a 200-mile sort of round trip, well, each way trip from where I am. And like, I didn't have to worry. I didn't have to be like, okay, where's my, you know, better charging app? Where's what freaking charging app am I supposed to use now? God damn it. Like, and, you know, that's the other part of it too, is like, they've done a lot of work on the software part of it. So, you know, when you have an Equinox or whatever, you have an app that you can use to sort of track your charging, you know, see how the vehicle is, like every EV on the market.
Horrible, though.
But that app is better than it was. It was
true.
Like it is improved, and they're still, you know, to your point, Mac, they've been sort of toiling away at the like low end of the, you know, like what's the bare minimum so the accountants don't hate us that we can do, and it's getting better. I still hate the app, but you know, it does offer sort of a glimpse, at least a start of like where you can be like, okay, we're gonna actually maybe eventually get to the place where, you know, the back end does like the charging networks for you, and you can just kind of drive, plug in, and go.
Well, and they're pursuing the right path, right? Like, I think part of why I find GM's approach so compelling, and I'm cooler on the trucks. I'm not sure that just throwing batteries at the problem is going to solve it. But, like, you know, I get in a Mach-E, which beat these cars to market by a long way. But it also feels like Ford is trying to just copy Tesla in a way that is not executed as well and still suffers from the same problem. Like, I get in a Mach-E, and I feel like this is a stripped-out product where they've cut all the costs they possibly can. And they're still not selling it for as cheap as an Equinox. I get an ID4, the window switches, the capacitive controls. Okay, so we're nickel and diming me. So instead of selling me a better experience, you're going to sell me a worse experience for more money. And I think what GM has done is like the EV9 being the three row without caveats. You know, the Model Y was the existing product in this class that sort of didn't have caveats, except for the caveat of it's a Tesla, which you like the way they do things or they don't. And the Equinox feels like a Chevy for better and worse. It's not the absolute nicest interior. It's not the most cutting edge on tech, but everything about it feels normal. It feels well done. It feels well executed. And it doesn't force you to learn a bunch of weird habits. The shifter's intuitive. All these things that just make it like one pedal driving, super easy to toggle on and off. You don't need to press an on button when you get in like a Tesla, but also if you need to leave it running, there's a button for that. If you need to force it to go off, there's a button for that. All of this sort of one foot in the old world, one foot in the new world, but I think straddling that line really well where you're giving customers a lot of choice. And that's what I like about the platform so much.
Tim, you got anything you want to say about Equinox in closing?
No, I think you guys covered it. It's our breakthrough EV of the year. Inaugural.
Yeah. All I'll say is I had this one moment with mine that I was testing where I was driving on this on-ramp to get on the highway, and I had a Super Cruise on, so the car is handling a lot of the driving itself. I was listening to my favorite podcast, besides this one, obviously, and was driving in total silence, and, you know, the car is operating, driving on its own, and I'm in this great, you know, I felt like I was in the future. Like a good version of the future. And it was in a Chevrolet, too. Not like a Tesla or a Lucid or some brand no one's ever heard of, or some you know, BYD or some Chinese newcomer that's going to come here and clean everybody's clock. It was a Chevy. Like, it felt like, you know, like a good version of the future. And I haven't felt that way in a long time. And, like, that's what made me feel so good about being in this thing. It's like, okay, you're going to make it. You guys are going to figure this out. And, like, that's really good to see. So, a deserved win for this, and probably not the last time GM's going to do it. So,
no, it's good segue.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to, in closing, we have our last segment, plus and minus, where we talk about, you know, wins and losers we've seen of the week, you know, like a battery.
Do we want to do a quick one on who won tech and who won person?
I think our best bet is to do that. If you want to read some more about our Breakthrough of the Year coverage, go to InsideEVs.com, as we also have more awards we gave for Person of the Year and Technology of the Year. But I think for now, we should probably talk about who's up and who's down this week. Everybody, since there's four of us this time, everybody gets one. I'm going to pick on our newcomers first. Matt, who you got? Who's up or down this week in your book?
So my down is, since the last part is this Rivian quality story that has been going around, of just that Rivian is now last on Consumer Reports reliability rankings. You know, that's just a bummer to hear, because that's obviously going to be the hardest part of starting your car company. I mean, we've seen everyone having this issue. But, you know, they are in this situation where the R2 needs to work the minute it comes out, because at this high end, you know, it's interesting to see, you would never see this with a normal brand, that the reliability is the last, and the loyalty and satisfaction with the brand is first in this Consumer Reports study. And I think that shows how much people like this product and how great of a product it is. But when you're selling $100,000 cars, your buyer base normally has a second car. So if the car is down for a little bit, that's fine. When you're getting to the point of selling like $50,000 cars, like the R2 is going to be, people are going to run for the hills if they find out that these things are all breaking, and it's going to crush your, you know, depreciation. And if you have very bad depreciation, you can't offer competitive lease rates. So this is a down indicator for them, and I hope they can get their stuff together before high volume time, because I'm rooting for them to win, but they need to step it up.
Nice. Abby, who you got?
So I'm going with the plus today, and it's a little bit of a mix, mostly because, as we know, Cruise is shutting down. So GM's autonomous work is being rolled into the larger sort of company. Now, that is unfortunate for a lot of the engineers and a lot of the folks that have worked on this for many, many years. It came as a real surprise. A lot of folks that are there are really reeling from this announcement. But the good news is, at least according to GM, they're going to roll this team into GM's larger Super Cruise work. That just means that they're going to take a lot of those learnings that they had from Cruise and turn it into something that is going to be in consumers' hands. And that's a huge plus, especially if we want to talk about the future of electrification, the future of, you know, in theory, autonomous driving, even though that's still, you know, many, many, many years off in the future. But I think that, you know, it's an interesting shift given sort of, especially I live here in LA, and, you know, you're starting to see a lot of like Waymo vehicles around here. There's no other competitor in that space right now that's actually like in sort of as visible as Waymo has been here in LA. To see Cruise shut down sucks, but at the same time, I think ultimately it will be a good thing for consumers down the road, because they'll roll that technology into actual vehicles that we own, stuff like the Equinox EV that we all drove. So I think it's an overall plus. It's a little bit of a mixed news, but I think it's an overall plus.
Here's hoping. Tim, plus or minus, who you got?
I also have a plus, and it also has to do with autonomous vehicles. My plus is Waymo. I mean, this is Google or Alphabet's self-driving outfit, and it's just like consistently but slowly running away with the autonomous vehicle, you know, game. I mean, its primary competitor in the U.S., which is Cruise, folds up shop this week. Suddenly, last week, it announced that it's expanding to a new city. So next year, they're going to start testing in Miami. That's in addition to Phoenix, Los Angeles, San Francisco. So they're running away with it. Waymo is doing very well, and really, you know, nobody's even close.
Nice. I'll wrap us up. My end of the week is also a plus, and it's Amazon, because yesterday, Amazon just dropped on everybody that Amazon Autos, the online car buying marketplace, is finally open in 48 different cities. So you can buy a car on Amazon now. Great. Amazing. For now, it's just Hyundai's. All of their lineup, which is cool to see, including their EVs, which are excellent. And this is great because now you can buy one of Hyundai's like world-class excellent EVs without ever having to deal with a Hyundai dealer. I don't want to stereotype.
And instead you deal with Jeff Bezos.
That's a tough one, right? Because like Amazon is kind of objectively evil, but also it's a Hyundai dealership and they're not the best, to put it very politely. So I'm like that guy, the meme pressing the button. I'd like to see this take off. Hyundai will never admit this, but I think this move was done because they know that their dealer network is not great. and they want to sell these like Tesla fighting EVs. And so this is a nice workaround. Amazon's going to be adding more brands to the marketplace next year. I'm really eager to see if it takes off. Or I went through the platform. It's super easy to use. I stopped just short of like filling out a credit application to actually buy something. But give it a try and like let us know tips@insideevs.com how it goes for you. And that's a nice development in car buying. That's it for this week's episode. We gave you a really packed one, but we've been busy lately. We'll be back next Friday for a fresh take on this week's EV news. Today's show is produced by Michael Perkins, and it's brought to you by the Motorsport Network. Our guests have been Abigail Bassett and Mac Hogan.
Thank you, guys.
Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review. It'll really help us out. And if you liked what you heard, you can find us on your favorite social media platform and check out all our latest coverage, including our Breakthrough Award winners, on InsideEVs.com. See you next time.
Thanks, everyone.
Woohoo!